near and far, welcome everyone who have ears to hear, eyes to see, and brains to perceive and reason with. To anyone who can analyze, deconstruct, and who can see through the lies and the deceit that we are asked to believe in. And to those who can, despite hypnotic incursions of fame and fluff designed to cloud you with emotions of urgency and sentiment, can see through it and look at history and understand that it's only through knowing where we have been that we can know where we should go. The powerhouse that is your psyche stands vulnerable in front of those who have studied us for generations on how to crack your code and your defenses. And the secret societies and the subversive groups that have designed schemes to get us under their control. This is an appeal to sanity and to rationality. The media meat machine has spit out yet another bone and the masses are hungry. So it's from the wilderness this time, as very lone voices, that we cry out to you and your ability to see through the charade. Thomas Sheridan is an artist, writer, and musician from Ireland. His first major book, Puzzling People, The Labyrinth of the Psychopath, is a first-person account of the cheats, the charlatans, the liars, the neglectful parents, abusive teachers, two-faced politicians, and their psychopathic control grid. His latest is called The Anvil of the Psyche, but today we have a far more pressing analysis to share with you that I really hope that you will take the time to consider and think about. Hi, Thomas. Welcome, and thank you for coming back on the program again. It's great to talk with you. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. Everything's good, Henrik, and it's great to be back on Red Eyes after a while. It's always a pleasure to, big fan of the show, and I'm happy to be here to talk to you again.
Thank you, Thomas. Well, this is going to be interesting. It's been a very interesting week. It might actually go down, at least from my own part of view, as the week when this so-called movement, whatever that we're in, that actually has gone through a mitosis at this stage. We've had a major cell division, and you've realized, unfortunately, that we, you know, I hate to use that word, I guess, but, you know, we have really fallen back into the very, very old, the same old Hegelian political dialectic, and people have just completely come out of the woodworks to defend people that want to take them down a cul-de-sac and lead them completely down a path where we've been so many times in the last 300 years, and calling for the same old crap. But, well, we're going to, of course, break down some of this, Thomas, but tell us a little bit about your reaction, because you were critical of Russell Brand as soon as he did his interview on BBC there with Paxman. You detailed some of these things right away. You broke it down. I know that you have somewhat of a different perspective in terms of the BBC apparatus and the way that they've been actually trying to quell the Jimmy Savile scandal and everything else. But you were also fiercely attacked, of course, after you just spoke out about this. Tell us about that.
Well, I'm good at being fiercely attacked. I'm deeply involved in researching the Savile thing at the moment for a future project. And as I was looking at this, I was saying to myself, they're going to do something. They're going to create a distraction. Something's going to happen. And I didn't expect this. What we got was remarkable. It's like all my life I've waited to see one of the great psyops in my own, awareness and see it as it was taking place. And it was delivered by Paxman, a personal friend, motorcycle buddy and horse riding buddy of Prince Charles, and a guy who's not a very good actor and a kind of an okay comedian, on a BBC magazine program that is supposed to be the epitome of everything that's wrong with the world. And then to see so many people that I have known for a while who would share memes on Facebook saying television and, British brain control and British brainwashing company, sharing basically a video about what should be the enemy, and sharing in such a way, it was almost like with messianic zeal. It was almost like a religious movement. And at first I watched the video and I was thinking to myself, well, he's not saying anything new at all. I was watching it as progressing, and I wasn't completely convinced by what he was saying. Didn't seem to be a real conviction there, and that's another aspect of this. I don't see a real conviction in that particular interview. Maybe in other ones he has, but not that one. But then when he comes out with the money shot, I want an egalitarian socialist system with a massive transfer of wealth. I was like, what is it, 1976 again? I mean, where has this guy been? Where has this guy been? We've had 150 years of this, and by
at least, of
catastrophic failure of this bizarre scientific system, which has probably left, by conservative estimates, 80 to 90 million people dead all over the world, murdered, by the way, in genocide, basically. Because it was a class genocide.
Yes.
Middle class, mostly middle class people, by the way, where they would unleash the very, very poor people on the middle class to protect the wealthy.
Yeah.
Now, here he was talking in such a way that I heard before from people. Now, before we get into this, I'm not knocking Russell Brand, the human being or the person. I do believe that at some level, you know, he does mean well, and he thinks he's doing the right thing. I haven't seen anything to say that he's like some kind of plant. I haven't seen that yet. I could be wrong.
That might be.
And it might be. We just don't know. But people have been quick to bring up the fact that he's been a drug addict, and we shouldn't really go into that. I mean, I know it could be a factor in terms of he's replaced one addiction for another, but I've known people who were heroin addicts, and they were fine human beings.
Sure, of course.
Things happen.
Absolutely.
Things happen.
That's not the issue here. Yeah.
Leaving that aside, the absolute silliness of a guy who's worth $15 million saying, okay, all wealth creation ends with me from this point on. I've had my fun and the rest. This is a typical armchair socialist, champagne socialist, smoked salmon socialist behavior. That when I get the money, it ends with me. Now, you said something yesterday on your podcast with Lana. It says, where was he in during the 20th century?
Yeah.
You know, he was alive during most of it. He spent most of his life in it. And yet, the horrors that were revealed that we saw in our own lives. I mean, socialism, you know, okay, on the surface it appeals to a kind of a straightforward idea of like egalitarianism and we all have a certain thing. But what people have to realize is that socialism is not a benevolent system. It is a scientific method of quantifying and processing human behavior in a socio-economic context according to management of resources. It treats human beings no more compassionately than it would treat farm animals. It really is. That's how it was designed. That's what the Fabians were about.
Yep.
This is what George Bernard Shaw was going on about when he said you must justify your existence, though not to the royal family members he was with in all the time, constantly playing total.
That is an amazing clip, by the way. That's available on YouTube. We could play it right here, right now.
Yeah, nasty man.
And I mean, George Bernard Shaw, he's one of the founders of the Fabian Society, and this is the paper, The New Statesman. They've, Fabian Society created The New Statesman with the Webbs, Sidney Webb and his wife. So here's George Bernard Shaw talking about that you have to justify your existence, and if not, I'll kill you.
I don't want to punish anybody, but there are an extraordinary number of people whom I want to kill. You must all know half a dozen people at least who are no use in this world, who are more trouble than they are worth. Just put them there and say, sir or madam, now will you be kind enough to justify your existence? If you can't justify your existence, if you're not pulling your weight in the social boat, if you're not producing as much as you consume, or perhaps a little more, then, clearly, we cannot use the big organization of our society for the purpose of keeping you alive, because your life does not benefit us, and it can't be of very much use to yourself.
So what he's talking about is that you should sit in front of a committee, and you should justify your existence to these people, and if you can't on those terms, on those conditions, you're not worth your life, you don't have the right to your own life. This is a psychotic murderer, you know, a mass murderer at that.
Oh yeah, and a fantastic hypocrite, a phenomenal hypocrite. He was a constant guest in Buckingham Palace of royalty. Do they justify their existence? Do they justify their economic worth?
Oh,
I mean, it's just incredible what we're dealing with here. And people need, you know, but ask people to just please sit with us through the rest of this interview and then sit back and then study history. Because what you'll see is this is a meme. This is a constant with these sort of like armchair socialists. Again, we're dealing with people who think they have some kind of scientific rationale to process humanity. Now, there are good aspects to socialism, such as, well, it depends on what you look quite good. Is national healthcare really about supporting big pharma and medicating people? You know, that kind of, you could look on it that way.
Exactly.
And a state education really about indoctrination more than anything else. We could look at all these things. But I always found it interesting in my life, and it's still going on, Henry, to this day, that the most ardent socialists I've ever met, including the zealot-like fanatics within the bizarre Socialist Workers' Party, are all from privileged backgrounds.
That's right, yep.
They romanticize poverty. They romanticize it. Now, I grew up in, like, the worst slum on the north side of Dublin, which was also a socialist housing scheme, I might add, that was built in a socialist model and then was left to rot, and the infrastructure just decay. I mean, I'm not praising myself, but through playing in bands and other things and going to school, I got myself into Wall Street. I was making a lot of money as a graphic designer. And then people like this would say to me, you don't have the right to that money. And somehow it should be taken off me because I've worked my way up from the bottom to that position.
Yeah.
Somehow I've now done something immoral. But them born into money are walking around, you know, constantly regurgitating Trotskyite rhetoric and waving their red flags and going into mind control trances with their red drums at the SWP meetings. They're all right. They somehow have, see, they talk about no class system, but it's ravaged with the class system. Ravaged with it.
Yeah.
It's just a different kind of class system. And it's the same people in power. And you were correct to point out yesterday that when they incite these revolutions, no matter where it happened, Kampuchea, the Soviet Union, it's the same process. The ones that have the real power in the country, they go on holiday to Switzerland or somewhere like that.
That's right. Well, I mean, just the idea as well that, I mean, socialism doesn't bring prosperity. It's going to take you in the reverse direction. And then people have, you know, come back and said, well, you know, he's not advocating, you know, communism or the Russian Revolution in the way that that was, you know. Okay, but it's a sliding scale. I mean, socialism is like being pregnant. You can't be a little pregnant. It's going to, yep. either you have it or you don't have it. And from there, it is very well, you know, you could end up at the end of that scale and you have communism instead of socialism in its place. And same thing then has happened in Russia, let's say, that even if some people have a, you know, brain deficiency and think that Lenin was benevolent or something like that, but, I mean, look at the infrastructure that he set up. It was right for someone like Stalin later to come in and take that over. That's what happens in a centralized system. You build up this infrastructure that is tremendously dangerous when you get people in place and the wrong people are going to ascend inside of that political structure and that system, and they are going to have more power than ever at that stage. And Brand never specified in any capacity how are we going to prevent the same people from ascending within the system that he's advocating.
Well, he'll probably do it like, you know, the sort of like bearded college professors who invoke, well, we had Trotsky, the good communist. Now, Trotsky was an absolute psychopathic murderer. I mean, he was, you know, I read a book years ago. I wish I still had it, but it was about, and I can't remember the title. It was just called My Life in the USSR. And it was an American union leader in the 1930s who became disenfranchised with the Vanderbilt Rockefeller America and went off to the Soviet Union thinking he was taking part in this big workers' egalitarian process. And he left after a few years. But he spoke about things like Trotsky not only was telling people to kill 10% of the population just to put, you know, as the Chinese communist, the Chinese Cultural Revolution said later on, put a bullet of fear in the brains of the ones who haven't been shot, so they don't question the system. But he also claims, and I've read it on some other sites, that Trotsky took part in executions of men, women, and children. And then this ties into the whole romanticism that he was the good communist. And you have that film about Frida Kahlo, and they portray Trotsky as this lovely old, like, Santa Claus figure, you know, who was on the run from the evil Stalin. I mean, this is a guy who was, like, who, you know, he was the one who created these systems where the local, like, thugs and hooligans were given revolvers and guns, told to kill anyone they want, seize their property, and they just took people in the basements and murdered them. It's maddening that people don't research this. You know?
It's unbelievable. People have to look in the shadow of Hermes, Jüri Luna, the journalist who fled from occupied Estonia into Sweden, and we're going to try to get him on here soon, by the way. He detailed how Jacob Schiff funded the journeys of Lenin and Stalin. They managed to bring in about 80,000, you know, terrorists / revolutionaries. A lot of these were American, you know, communists as well, by the way. And they funded this whole trip of everybody over there. He details in a broken down and looked at, you know, the train journey that Lenin did from Switzerland to to Russia, how he stopped off in Stockholm and was given all these money by these worker parties and everything else. This was condoned by the whole establishment. This was the point, that, you know, Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution. It's right there, people.
Yep. And who were the first ones that were murdered? Who were the first ones that the Bolsheviks put up against the wall? From Cambodia to Cuba to the Soviet Union, everywhere else, was the ones who were the initial members of who started the revolution. Because the first thing they do is, the ones who won the revolution will find that the utopia or the egalitarian idealism system is not being delivered, and they will rebel against the ones who've taken power. So the first thing they do is they shoot the ones who actually started it. So the ones who are the most fanatical foot soldiers of the revolution at first, even if they have good aims, even if they have good intentions, which many of them would have had it, they were the first ones up against the wall. That's what happens when you're dealing with a scientific process. People have to keep remembering this. We're dealing with scientists. The Fabians took it to the ultimate degree in terms of the scientific processing of this system. But ultimately, it's a system designed to prevent the poor from overthrowing the rich by giving them a better standard of living.
Yeah.
Ideally, it's like being a unit. But ideally, to them, it's having human battery hens. That's really the best way to put it, like human battery hens.
Yeah. Now, what about the idea then that he's something coming up from an outsider or something like that, Russell Brand? I mean, let's not forget here, he had his own, it was canceled just recently here, but two seasons on FX, the TV channel. That's actually Fox Entertainment Group, the 21st Century Fox. As Rupert Murdoch's news corporation, by the way, but he invites some of the people from the alternative circuit. You know, he's been doing interviews with Daniel Pinchbeck. He's been on Alex Jones, and oh my God, he's one of us, right? He's one of our guys.
As somebody said on my Facebook page in criticizing you today, they said that Red Ice is standing in the way of a spiritual revolution.
Spiritual revolution, huh? How about that?
Spiritual revolution.
Yeah.
So now, socialism is now equated with spiritualism. And yet you say this to people, okay, and that's one thing. Okay, maybe he's sincere about this stuff. Maybe we do now have a new kind of spiritual thing. But again, to me, all these things, like waking up, the spiritual, whatever it is, your journey in life, you're born alone, you die alone, and you don't discover anything in your life of importance through a collective. You do it as an individual journey. It's like Carl Jung, James Joyce, Joseph Campbell, they've told us everything is the monomyth, the personal journey of the hero to make these discoveries. You don't get there as part of a herd. And this is the whole thing that most upsets me about the whole Russell Brand thing, what he's getting is a collectivization of what we would call this sort of kind of a socialist spiritualist movement. And there's people joining Facebook groups that have obviously been set up by the Socialist Workers Party and groups like that in Russell Brand's honor. And they're now sharing memes that are straight out of the Socialist Workers newspaper.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's so many levels we can talk about this. We're going to get into how this has been trying to channel the energy of the alternative research community, the alternative media, and all this stuff. We saw this happen with the green movement, exactly the same thing, when all these watermelons start popping out. They're green on the outside, but they're red on the inside. They managed to take something that's really good in that sense and true and with a genuine concern, and channel this completely into a different political ideology. And they're doing the same, I think, with a tremendous momentum that is behind the alternative press and the alternative media, and channeling this way, way down into this cul-de-sac of, like, you know, stupid socialism, lefty ideology. And, you know, I even had an idea at some point there that, oh my God, these are people that actually are, you know, they have managed to realize that it's outside of that Hegelian dialectic, outside of that structure. They have an idea that, oh, okay, wait a minute, let's step back. If this is really about a revolution in consciousness, is it wise to go down some of these paths that we've been down already? Has this anything to do with awakening or anything like that? I mean, look at the cover as well, even, Thomas, on the New Statesman that he edited, which, you know, we've talked about before in our commentary, but if people don't know, This is a Fabian socialist magazine. That's why he's doing all this. That's why he's talking about this in the interview and everything, because he's on behalf of them trying to spread further the ideology, if you will. But There he has a brain within a light bulb with these, you know, Roman leaves around it, and it says a revolution of consciousness.
Yeah, and it ties into the transhumanist thing nicely too, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure does.
Yeah.
Did people forget about symbolism, you know, fire in the minds of men, lighting up the mind? I mean, come on, people.
How many years has Red Ice been on the air? How many hundreds of guests and thousands of hours of people have been talking about this stuff? How many, myself and others, have spent years studying this? We put our head above the water. We put stuff out there that we really feel. And there's a lot, not just me, you and me, there's hundreds of us who've done work over the years. And for whatever reason, in an instant, a comedian and a bad actor takes it all, and he's now the owner of it.
Exactly.
So I'm not saying that because he stole it from us. I'm just saying it just shows you, Henrik, the power of celebrity.
Exactly.
It's an intoxication. And we had X Factor singing. We've had kind of reality shows based on picking stars from everything from the art scene to who's the best hairdresser. Well, guess what we have now? We now have the X Factor Truther.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. He was the host of Big Brother 2004, Brandt. You know, all these layers that he's gone through, and yet people have an idea. What I've heard anyway is like that he's, you know, he's questioning the current paradigm and looking for alternative, you know, genuine alternative political ideologies and everything else. And it's like, The person that I think then got him into this, if he wasn't there already, of course, is this new lady friend of his that he got involved in after he broke up with Katy Perry, Jennima Khan, or she was actually born Goldsmith, and she is the associate editor of this Fabian Socialist magazine, the New Statesman that Russell Brand co-edited for 1 week. But it's funny because that's the same thing right there. Her father. Yeah. Is Sir James Michael Goldsmith. He's a billionaire, you know, financier. He's a tycoon. He's been involved with the establishment for as long as he's been alive. You know, she has two brothers, Zach Goldsmith. He's a Tory MP. He's married to Alice Rothschild. And then you have you know, another brother called Ben Goldsmith. He was, you know, up until a year ago married with Kate Rothschild. So the Goldsmith family has, you know, practically been trying to inbreeding with the Rothschilds here. So how is it that a daughter to one of these, you know, billionaire tycoons all of a sudden comes in and starts editing one of these Fabian Socialist magazines? Are people not questioning this?
It's one of the great ironies of the champagne socialist is they can't see their own irony. That's what I find amazing. This is, and again, I've seen this all my life. You know, from these movie directors like Ken Loach who make films about like how people in Britain and Ireland should have had communist revolutions coming from a privileged background. I mean, all these Trustafarians who go back to their parents' stately homes in Cambridge while a demanding revolution on the weekends. And here's a classic example, right? The main socialist activist in Ireland is a guy called David Begg, right? He's the head of the largest trade unions here. He's also a director of the central bank and was instrumental in the IMF bailout and the Lisbon Treaty both passing. Again, and he said, again, they have no concept of their own irony, or else deep down inside, they know that their socialism is a load of BS, and I think there's a lot to that as well, that they give to us as a mirage, an illusion, a dopamine fix in our neocortex. And then they let us fight over that. I'm on the black square. I'm the white square, the chess. Well, they sit off the chessboard in their Swiss homes or whatever, in the Caribbean, whatever, and the rest of us are all fighting over, but it's business as usual for them. I mean, after all these years, I thought we in the alternative movement have broken people free from the left-right crap. I really thought that was over. I thought it was done. And any criticism I've seen people putting up against Russell Brand, I've seen rebuttals now from people that I thought were, you know, what you call quote-unquote awake, whatever that means, saying, oh, yeah, but capitalism is much worse. They're back on the feckin' chessboard.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. They've given up the rational capability of using their brain, and they think that just because you try to pinpoint this, that you're exposing the fact that, hey, wait a minute, this guy is just asking you to fall right back in line. No matter how much good words they use, you have to see through this, people. This is what they do. They use these good words to sucker you in, just like they did with the Green Movement and everything else, to channel this away. And you're like, oh, my God, this yeah, this guy's like, he's the real deal. He's talking, you know, to the people now. And just because you point out the fact that this is just regular left-wing nonsense and bullshit, it's still within the same paradigm, you realize that then they flip right back at you and call you a right-wing nutcase for pointing that out. And then you realize, uh-oh, oh my God, there he goes, you know. I thought, just as you said, that they were outside of this and actually realized, too, that there's a bigger scheme and a bigger, you know, agenda behind all this. But nope. It's just the same old story. Mankind has been stuck in this, you know, left and right brain hemisphere battle for years. The political spectrum is just a reflection of that. And people have refused to merge these two sides and grow up and you know, evolve out of this. And they're completely stuck within the same paradigm as we've been for over thousands of years now. It's really, really disappointing. It's not a revolution in consciousness, people.
No, it's not. And it's a, you know, I know people are going to be angry at us for doing this broadcast, but look, it's not meant as a personal thing. We're trying to just like say, you know, I've been around a long time now. I'm in my late 40s. I've seen it all. You've interviewed enough people on this show to know that it runs to a certain kind of format. It does revolve. There are revolutions. Everything keeps coming back. And what happened on Newsnight last week is a perfect example of how they always revolve us back to square one. Again, we're dealing with scientists. We're dealing with scientists who sat down. They've looked at this alternative movement. They've looked at the size of it. They've looked at the growth of it. They looked at people's disenfranchised. Being disenfranchised by the political system and not voting. And they're saying, how can we co-opt and bring that back into the fold? How can we use that? So the scientists, quote unquote, develop their hypothesis at the London School of Economics.
Yes.
They then feed that to, say, radical groups, particularly in the UK, in places like Cambridge and Bristol and the universities, the kind of infiltrated MI5 universities. They filter among the activist community. They gather data. They gather information. They run smear campaigns. They cause divisions. They find out how we tick, what we are, how we feel about things. When you're with these people, they'll ask you questions. Thomas, how do you feel about chemtrails? Well, how do you feel about this? How do you feel about that? And then they find certain trigger words, and they find out memes, and they say, there's a magical word you can use that will just bring them all in. It's called Building 7. You don't have to say anything about it. You don't have to elaborate on it. Just get Russell Brand to say Building 7, and that'll be it. And all of a sudden, he's one of us. There's all these kinds of things. Then that policy goes back to the London School of Economics. They test it. They measure it. They quantify it. And they go, what's the next thing we can do? I tell you what, what's the big event for them coming up? The Bilderberg Festival. What we'll do is we'll create a fringe festival on the side, create a party atmosphere. We'll have all the lab rats in there, and we can quantify and measure and calculate on some more. We'll bring in the people from the Cambridge universities. We'll do a little bit of research, and then we'll do this. And we'll bring in people from Charlie Skelton from Channel 4 and The Guardian, who are famous for running these scams on people, like space cadets, where you pretend to bring people into space. Then they go back, and then they say, okay, now we'll unleash our main test subject, Russell Brand. I really do believe, Henrik, that that's what goes on. I really do believe they see us as lab rats.
Yeah.
And when they see a threat, they don't, in times past, they may have went charging in with their machine guns, but they learned that doesn't work. So what they do from the Fabians on is they develop an analytical scientific process to quantify it, understand it, measure it, and then break it down. And what they're doing now is breaking the movement in two. They're getting rid of the loonies like me and you. You know, and they're going to move it, get these other guys, these other people, the people who've been spellbound literally by Russell Brand saying nothing really, other than confirmation bias. And then they're going to actually try and move them, and they're doing it, back onto the chessboard and getting them voting possibly for the British Labour Party. Remember, this is really based for the UK, where there's the biggest Brit split of all that's happening.
That's right.
New Labour has been very, very damaged by Tony Blair and his war crimes. They want to get this notion in. Remember, they want to get to win the next election. They have to start to rebrand them through Milbrand and the rest of them as a left-wing party again. They now have a massive constituency of people who have been led, and they will eventually be worked on by Labour canvassers and all these other groups, and they'll slowly, socially indoctrinate them into socialism. And the next thing you know is they'll all be scooped back up into the traditional left-wing parties. And people like us and the rest of us who've seen right through it, we'll be completely marginalized That's a good thing. I like being a nomad, a gypsy, but outside the system, where we will, you know, where, and they'll say to these people that's bringing them in, look, guys, we know. And the press release from Cambridge University this week was just like this. We know and understand why you go for these conspiracy theories. We completely understand them. We don't think you're a lunatic anymore. We don't think you're a nutjob anymore. We're not going to question your humanity and intellect anymore if you question vaccines. We understand. Now vote Labour. That's what
I'm I mean, what I find interesting here as well is that David Cameron has been... I've never seen a prime minister more fascinated and, you know, titillated by the Swedish model, the Nordic system, than any other previous prime minister, I think. And I always have to tie it back to that idea because, as I mentioned before, then the closest society that has come to this idea of a socialist egalitarian utopia, as far as I've been able to tell on the face of this earth, it is the political laboratory of Sweden, the Nordic model, and everything that's been going on there. And because this is not a tyranny with, you know, that's going to show the hard hands first. This is going to be a soft tyranny. This is the new revolution that is here to, just as Aldous Huxley pointed out, you know, in the Brave New World, that this is going to be something that is within the confines of a servitude that you're going to love. You're going to appreciate it. You're going to want to have it this way. And the more and more, you know, freedom and opportunity and options that is taken away from you through gradualism, through slow, you know, glacial changes, you're not going to notice. This is something that's been evolving in Sweden for over 50, 60 years now, and I see right through that garbage when I hear it. And if this is, and if there's anything in a resemblance here that we're talking about in terms of what he's suggesting, Russell Brand, then I can see the bullshit in it, and I can see the lies in it, and I think that this would be the most dangerous, awful thing that could happen in the rest of the world if this is what the intention is, if this is where they want to steer the ship of state, if you will, into this intensely and immensely controlled and just, I mean, God, the shows that we've done about this now, the Swedish society, and people just need to go back and listen to those shows and realize what type of society that we're talking about. This is not about freedom. It's not about, you know, fairness. It's not about any of the things that he says that it's for. It's working counterintuitively. This is going to be the death of everything that you thought that you had in your life.
Yeah, and socialism robs people of happiness. And this is really what they're playing on. Russell Brand and the BBC, you know, let's say what it really is, the Fabian BBC networks, have given people that shot of dopamine and the sense that they could be happy, that we could live in a better world. And this is the old socialist trick, that we can produce a better tomorrow, a fair, egalitarian society. And they play on these things. But you show me one socialist nation, one on earth, that actually seems happy and contented, where there's not a lot of resentment.
See, this is the problem, though, because, I mean, as we've been exposing now, year after year after year, these British magazines are constantly pushing the Telegraph, the Guardian. They're all talking about how Scandinavia is the best place in the world. These UN reports are coming out. Legatum Group with these neocons like Jeremy Gedfin in charge of that. They're always constantly pushing at this political and economical structure for a reason, people. They're doing it because they're trying to sell you a bunch of lies, because it's the perfect society for control and subjugation of the people, where they lack even the basic capability of, one, understanding that they're entrapped in the system, two, the media structure is not there where you can speak out about these things. And you're going to see some pretty intense stuff going down in Scandinavia, I think, in the next couple of years, specifically in Sweden, because of the fact that the press has been so incredibly just on a lockdown state, and the people's, you know, real sentiments are not being represented. And what this is causing, of course, is even more extremism, which plays again back into the Hegelian dialectic. We're run like rablets, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, and all the pictures they show of Sweden, it's always like a really pretty or beautiful Swedish girl, and she's in a white coat. She's in a white coat as a scientist, or else she's on the side of a mountain or something having
right.
a great time.
Exactly.
You know, and it's ridiculous. It's just like the whole thing is farcical on so many levels. You guys were a perfect scientific laboratory for them when you think about it. You had this Viking past, so you were wild at one time. You had this enormous ability to travel and go around the world like Celtic people had when you were Vikings. You also were experimented on by the Nazis, weren't you, in World War II when they did all the genetic breeding up there. You're a big arms manufacturer, even though you're neutral. You're not another
it's fun. It's fantastic. Absolutely.
Sweden at one time was the second or third largest weapons manufacturer in the world.
That's right. Yeah, per capita. They're actually number one. If you measure per capita, they're still today number one weapons producer manufacturer. Yeah.
Yeah, and again, you know, the happiness thing, you know, whereas the happiness is not found through the collective. I mean, Britain in the 1970s had its socialist period. From like 1970 to when Thatcher came in, they had a socialist Britain. And it was a miserable place. It was filled with race riots, massive poverty. This is where the punk rock movement came on. It was a reaction to the sheer poverty and destitution of this socialist Britain under Labour. It had, you know, just a sense of misery and gloom about it. You had the BBC all during the 70s making what were called kitchen sink dramas, which were just these sort of like dramas, these TV shows about misery and like The Boys from the Black stuff and how your life is crap and how your life is miserable. And you just got to accept it because this is just how you are. And being working class means being miserable. And on top of that, you have massive strikes by the unions. This is why so many working class people voted for Thatcher and the Tories, because they were so sick of socialism.
Yeah,
and yet they were the ones who were supposed to be the most happy with it.
Well, exactly. It's just unbelievable. And I don't know how many times you can just monitor this through history, as I've mentioned before. Look at Sweden in the 70s, suicide statistics, read books like The New Totalitarians, this British author, Roland Hunt, for I don't agree much with his history chapter. But otherwise, beyond that, he managed to demonstrate absolutely that if there was anything that had to do with this implementation of technology, a totalitarian, technologically based, you know, scientific dictatorship of how to use this, of how basically decapacitate the individual. Even the politicians is very much removed. It's all about a major bureaucracy being run. And he details this very, very well in his book. And I just, all I can do is just urge people to read, urge people to look into this, just investigate the alternatives that you're being asked to swallow at this time, because it's a step backwards, people. We're going to fall back into tyranny, and they're asking you to accept this. And I mean, it's a natural process that anybody in politics are looking for strategies to placate and take over movements. We shouldn't expect something else. But I at first wouldn't give, you know, Russell this much credit at all. But if it wasn't for the fact that I got exposed to how intense the defense was against the fact that you're pointing out some of these things and the critique, I've realized that there's something really scary going on here behind the surface. There's something really wicked in the way that people have been manipulated and just completely coerced into falling into this lie. It's unbelievable to me.
Yeah, it's just like a cult. That's how cults work. They create a notion of, you know, this is the only paradigm there is, and you're locked within it. And any kind of criticism of the cult is automatically viewed as an attack. And the reason why the attack happens and the fanaticism happens is because what Rollo May said in his book, The Courage to Create, the fanaticism is a deep down belief, is a deep down lack of belief in what you're defending. That's where fanaticism comes from. And people are being played like a fiddle on this one.
Yeah.
And don't, you know, and I know you feel the same way, Henrik, right? And I'm the same way. We're frustrated. We're not looking down on you people who fall for this. We're frustrated. And we're just asking you to just step back. Just, you know, step back and forget, you know, just look with a clear view, look at things, look at the history of socialism, look where it came from, the BBC, consider the things the BBC have done in recent years, consider the fact that the director of the BBC that just stepped down has started to say that the Labour Party must regain its roots. Now, this is the guy who protected Jimmy Savile. Look, and this could all tie into this stuff as well.
Yeah.
Just sit back. You know, have a kind of a measured approach to it, and then see where it goes. But don't instinctively share clips of anything, because what's happened, Henrik, is, and I covered this in my new book, The Anvil of the Psyche. human beings are so far away from what evolution wanted us to be, mainly because of our education system, that we have this oh my God impulse to everything. If we had that oh my God reaction in the wild, we'd be eaten by predators in seconds. The reason why is because they cultivated this kind of sensationalist shock, instant fix, instant gratification, you know, mindset within us, where things can happen in a split second. Now, that has made us very, very vulnerable to psychological manipulation from everything from mass media to, you know, commercialization, advertising, the works, you name it. It's all there.
Yeah.
That's because they've cultivated this oh my God thing. Now, if you look at game shows from the 1950s, even on American TV, the audience clap politely. They clap politely when things happen. When someone wins $10,000, they clap politely. It's a normal human response. Something happened in the 70s that is people, and happened then spread to Europe in the 80s, where people would scream on television, you know, the price is right, come on down. And they were like crazed, like messianic loonies in you know, some kind of like snake handler church for TV.
Hysteria.
And it's like, no, where has wisdom gone? Where has the ability to sit back and be a wise person gone from? You see, they've made us so vulnerable that, you know, we've forgotten how to be, even to protect our own consciousness. We've taken the natural firewall we probably would have had around our consciousness, or the ones that our ancestors developed over centuries, from everything from culture, you name it, or primitive forms of psychology, like things like fairy tales and folk tales. And it's been ripped off, and we, human beings, are, you know, we're an open book, and they can go in there every time, shake our brains around, and say, get all crazy and do what we do. And it's, you know, it's not natural. Go back and look at these old programs, read old articles in the newspapers, read letters from people from 100 years ago. This hysteria, this histrionic, you know, oh my God reaction is completely new, and it's not us. It's a phase we're in. We don't have to be like this always. And they've done it deliberately for that reason, because people, this is also why they've destroyed our attention spans as well. Instead of sitting down and reading a book by Thomas Sowell or you know, Noam Chomsky or anyone, we get all our information on a 5-minute clip from the BBC,
yeah,
from Newsnight.
Yeah. People don't listen, they don't read. There's no time for this. They are flooded with information. You can't think, you can't reason. It's only when people come along that can push the right, those triggers, push on those trigger words that have been pre-programmed into you from, you know, from birth, basically. And these are regurgitated in the media, that people fall into lockstep, and then they're like an army that's ready there to go to bloody battle with anybody who's going to post them now.
Yeah, and they're laughing at us all the time. That's another thing people have to remember, that when you share that BBC video, that the director general of the BBC and the rest of them are pissing themselves laughing at you, because they're going, ha, we got them. We so have them. And you remember that. Don't be suckers to anybody. Don't be suckers to these people who have jobs that you'd never get because you don't come from the right family.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, let's talk a little bit about what you think, why they are so interested in hijacking, if you will, then this. I mean, again, as I said, it's natural. It's going to happen. We've seen that within the Green Movement. We have version 2.0 about this now in terms of the alternative press. It's become, and for some people, it's going to be like, what are you talking about? This has happened like 50,000 times already. this mitosis, this cell division, and they're right. That has happened. I think it's a bigger one. I think we're seeing the cell division right now, but the fact is that it's a beast that it's being that's grown here, and I think that its craving for blood is going to be going to be endless, basically. But people are going to run on this fuel of like that it's for the greater good. It's for, you know, we have to have change. We have to, you know, all these kind of edicts that just kind of is rehashing whatever they heard before previously, without really rationally thinking this through, or even what they're part of, or what they're supporting, or who's behind it, or who's set up all these things to channel your energy down the completely wrong path. So what do you think in terms of the interest in really channeling this intense momentum that's been going within the alternative, you know, media and the press, and all these blossomings of shows, and people are, you know, genuinely talking about awakening, they're genuinely talking about a rise in consciousness, and you know, setting yourself outside of the Hegelian dialectic, the pre-digested political system, etc. I think that they are tremendously scared at the momentum and the energy that has managed to kind of collect and accumulate over the years. What do you think, Thomas?
Oh, it's an indirect compliment to us. It really is big time. It's a big time indirect compliment that we've actually made a real movement here. And I think it was Enoch Crane who said this to me when I was talking to him, and we did an event together in London, and he's bang on the money. He said, what makes this movement so dangerous is that none of us are in a collective. So therefore, when this event is over today, you go back to Ireland, I go back to what I do, other people go back to America, and then we won't see each other again until maybe the next conference. And that was very, and he said, that's what makes it so powerful. They can't get us in. And I was thinking about that, and he's absolutely right. You look at Occupy. Occupy was another, trap they tried to lay to try and quantify it, get you in, have minutes, have an agenda, have, a constitution. Because once they have you, entrapped within a framework of a document or a manifesto, all they have to do is modify that manifesto to get what they want from you.
Yeah.
This is what this is about. They were so, I can tell you for a fact, Henry, that I had MI5 operatives following me around when I was in England. I'm not a paranoid guy. It was pointed out to me. Friends of mine who go around busting these things told me and actually exposed them for me. And I've had this problem. And, England is a rat hole of espionage shills and infiltrators. It's really awful. It's a credit to the people there that they actually manage to keep an alternative movement going, considering if you look at some great articles I've got on my website too from The Guardian showing just how sick these infiltrators are, going as far as marrying women and having kids with them in order to get information on, people in the alternative movement. So that shows how terrified they are of individuality. They're so terrified of a loose grouping, I wouldn't even use the word collective, that has no central structure because they can't control it. They have to get that at any cost. They have to get all the ducks lined up in a row. This is why what gives us so much power is the fact that we're a thousand rabbits running in different directions, and they want us all, the rabbits in the pen. We cannot let that happen. This is very important. We have them frightened. There's no doubt about that. I've seen that firsthand. The infiltration within the scene is incredible. It's incredible. I used to think when I used to listen to Red Eyes years ago before I came out into the public, and I would hear people like Alan Watt, other people on your show saying that the infiltration in the scene is quite deep. I used to think, well, maybe they're a bit, the powers that be don't really care about us. And when I have to say I was very naive when I entered into this kind of work. I was just thinking, I'll just be seen as just another gobshite. I was talking about something that the mainstream media wouldn't cover. Now, I saw it in my own work, Henrik. Nobody was talking really about the psychopathic stuff in the alternative scene before, I came along. There was a few. I'm not saying I'm the only one, but the sheer number of, and a tremendous credit goes to Red Eyes for giving me the open platform at first. The amount of interviews I did, the psychopathic thing became a very powerful thing in the alternative media because we could actually point to the control structure and say, ha, that's what you are, and use their own science against them. And that was the main reason I got out there with that. Now, what happened then was they brought out John Ronson with his book to sort of make it look a bit goofy. There's no such thing really. And a psychopath's really, but it's not really like that. And then you have Professor Kevin Dutton, who writes a book called The Wisdom. Just as I predicted, they normalize psychopathologies, the wisdom of psychopaths, saying that, we need psychopaths, what we've done without them, Churchill wouldn't have won the war, etc., etc., etc. They watch us, they monitor us, they find memes that are coming up in the alternative. It's just like the music industry or anything else. They find these things that are coming up. They see the power of them, and then they capture them. And that's what's happening now, but it's happening on a major scale. They have Russell Brand capturing everybody, the spiritual side of it, the political side of it. And we all want a fairer world. We all want these bastards who run the banking system out. We want, we want a fairer form of, my personal belief is that capitalism would be fine if you took the central banks and the usury and all that rubbish out of it.
A free market would be just fine. It would be much better than it is today. And it wouldn't be perfect, but it would damn be much more fairer than it is today. And you could have your opportunity to do the things that you wanted to do without anyone standing there and threaten you with, imprisonment as they're trying to steal from you.
Or wage caps. Wage caps for some, by the way. Now, and that's another thing too. Socialism makes you a battery hen, but a proper free market capitalism makes you a free range hen. I'd rather be a free range hen any day.
That's right.
Than be a battery hen, because I'd have the chance maybe to fly over the fence.
That's how
people have to think and see these things. Yeah, we want a better world. We know the absolute scumbags are running the show.
Yep.
But it's always been like that. I've known it all my life. You've known it all your life. But just because somebody has come up and said it in such a way on the TV and articulated while bringing in his own alternative spiritual stuff and things like this, and doesn't mean that's the solution or that's the way to go. Ultimately, the revolution is an individual thing. It's always inside yourself. You see, this is another thing, Henrik, we've been brainwashed with. There's too much codependency in our lives. We're told that all our problems are caused by somebody else. And if you really look at it, other than if you've been truly victimized by another situation, but like all the mistakes, if you look in your life, they've probably been caused by what we've done ourselves.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? From a bad relationship to a bad business deal to getting involved in the wrong political crowd. I mean, I have friends who are IRA and ex-Nazi guys, and they hate the fact that they got involved in it. But ultimately, it's a learning thing for them. Okay, it's that everything you learn from your mistakes. You learn. There is no utopian mandate that's handed to you from above. Salvation is not external; it's internal. And yet, I hear these people saying, "Oh, Russ, our Russ, that's my favorite one, has given us a revolution of consciousness." No, he's given you a revolution of externalization. What you need to be looking for is an evolution of consciousness. And there's only one being on this universe that has that consciousness, and that's you.
That's absolutely right. This is marketing. They've done their focus groups. They've studied exactly, how to do it and what to do it and the way to deliver it and everything else. And I believe, this could be, they probably have, 200 people out there talking about these things, and if one of them kind of managed to catch the fish, if you will, if the bait, if they hook on the bait, if you will, then that's good. Then they have those people under control. But the idea is that this is we're also faced with the idea that this is a belief system. We're talking about a religion. This, of course, ties into the New Age movement and a lot of things that kind of comes with this, a lot of baggage there. But it's you're battling not with something that you really can touch at the end of it, because people project their own aspirations, their own changes that they want to see in the world onto somebody who can become the spokesperson for them, just like Obama did. I mean, this is it's 101. I didn't,
yeah.
Do people see this? Come on,
Oh, they have studied us. They have studied us like you cannot believe. And they're very aware of the archetypes and the power of the archetypes. And I can tell you, it's no coincidence that Russell Brand has a Jesus Christ look. That image is very powerfully embedded in the human psyche. It's the same reason why Che Guevara had it, and Jim Morrison and the rest of the Laurel Canyon CIA brigade had it. They know that the archetype is powerful because we've grown up looking at these icon pictures and so on.
Well, the funny thing here, though, is that he's not even trying to hide it. In fact, he's trying to hide it in plain sight by calling his tour the Messiah Complex. come on.
And he also has that. Ridiculous. He also has that Dionysian cult kind of thing going
on. Oh, sure, sure, definitely.
The womanly man, like Dionysus, was referred to, in traditional literature as a bearded womanly man. So he has that sort of like camp. Is just, oh well, I don't know about this, like this capitalism. It's like that kind of palaver, sort of almost like androgyny within the kind of a bearded thing. At the same time, he shags hundreds of women, and that's a Dionysian idea as well. I mean, the same kind of thing. It's like you and Lana said yesterday about, Karl Marx looks just like Yahweh. He does. if you look at Karl Marx's statue in Highgate Cemetery, it's the exact same face as Leonardo da Vinci's rendering of the psychopathic demon Jehovah on the roof of the Sistine Chapel. And you have it the same, and communism is full of that as well. What was Trotsky on his trip from Wall Street to the USA? He was Moses bringing the law into the Holy Land. If you take off his glasses, he looks like, it's hilarious.
Yeah.
It's hilarious.
Yeah, it is.
Wake up. Listen to the people who've been on. Go back. Look, please, get red eyes out and go back and listen to all the podcasts from day one. And it'll be made perfectly clear for you. It's not just me and you. There are hundreds of people who've been screaming at this stuff at you for years.
Yeah.
Don't give up on it. There's value in it. There's meaning in it. We got interested in this stuff and we put this stuff out there because we felt it was important. And I can tell it's a hell of a lot more important than sitting on a TV show spouting, you know, socialist platitudes for a kind of a confirmation bias of things we've heard a million times before.
Yeah, and despite all the infiltration and everything else that we, you know, that you mentioned here and that we've seen in history and everything else, just the idea too that we could give an objective committee basically more money and more centralized powers, and those infiltrators they would just go away if we do that. It would all be fine. We can do this, right? We can just let's build the infrastructure for perfect takeover and this technological new society, this brave new world that we're entering into. I mean, the way to go here is to decentralize, to move away from these giant, political structures and everything else, and this, these European Union-style, organization, bureaucratic bodies. This is going to be the death of us people. We have to move away from that.
True. Centralization is ultimately someone asked me recently, if you were to call yourself something in terms of your beliefs politically or anything. I thought about it and I said, I'd probably be a philosophical anarchist in that I feel that we should be left alone by government as much as possible. And I said, the reason why I have this belief is that I believe that human beings are inherently decent. Centralized structures and things like, collectives and Marxism and rules and all this stuff, they come from a fundamental belief that human beings are indecent. And that's a projection of the psychopathic individuals who create these systems to begin with. I truly believe that 96% of the human race, at least, are decent human beings. And if the system broke down tomorrow, it wouldn't be like the Omega Man. It wouldn't be like, these science fiction programs where you have people eating each other and stuff like that. The movies like The Road. I actually believe that people would find a way to keep hospitals open, would find a way to take care of people, look after the elderly, without a single bloody bureaucrat from the central committee coming down to tell them how to do it, or else to call them a racist or a misogynist or something else.
Well, I mean, absolutely. It's the structure that it exists right now that has managed to offer the bad service that it has, specifically then in Europe with the European version of socialism, specifically in Sweden as well. But the idea that, I've heard that socialism is charity, for example. No, it's not. It's not charity. It's because it's not voluntary. It's not based on the idea that you're there out of the goodness of your heart of contributing or doing what you're doing. Furthermore, the idea is that you're there to take care of yourself. But the fact is, I think that it would be even more we could offer a tremendous system upgrade, if you will, if it was based on the fact that people voluntarily contributed, their work. And at the end of the day, if you were there to be the master of your own money, I think very few people would, take as much as they can and run. It's like that. And furthermore, in a system like that, that would be exposed overnight. The bottom line is that these are authoritarians. They want to control and manipulate other people and tell them how they should live their lives. If there's one distinction here, it's the fact that, at least where I'm coming from, I want people to be able to make those decisions for themselves. There shouldn't be anyone else there to tell them how to live their lives, what they should do with it or what they should do with their money or anything like that. There's a clear distinction there. Either you're an authoritarian or you're a libertarian. And this fake political paradigm that you're in, it's broken. It's over. It was over, 50 years ago, but people are still stuck in it, right in it.
If people want to know what living in a socialist system is like, watch the movie One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, because that is a socialist. That's the allegory or the metaphor of a socialist society under the authoritarian Nurse Ratchet, and people sitting there waiting to get their medication, their meals, and everything else. And the character of Jack Nicholson's character of McMurphy, you look what happened to him. They lobotomized him. Look what happened to Native. He had to escape. That's run with the Natives. Don't be in the psych ward waiting for Nurse Ratchet to give you the medication, because that's what centralized structures like social collectives. And even, you know, people forget that national socialism, there was two words to that, national and socialism.
That's right.
It's always amazing how they forget the second part of it. And they're the first ones in groups like the SWP to go around calling people Nazis, when Nazi is just an abbreviation of national socialism. I mean, you really can. There's days you wake up and you really do believe that the Gnostics and the Cathars were right, that we're actually living in hell. And this is it.
Oh boy, yeah, I wouldn't agree with you there, you know, but I mean, to be honest and to be just frank about this, if people are truly interested in the history of the revolutions, you know, look into groups like the Jacobins, what happened during the Reign of Terror, and that this was the fact that this was the Illuminati, the real secret society, that sprung out of the tendencies at that time. You had connections with the Grand Orient of France and the Seven Sisters Lodge behind all of these other revolutions, and this has led to, it has been bloodshed, and the people in between, not the true upper aristocratic classes. Sure, you have a few of those that were sacrificed for good measure, I guess, because they wanted to try to take out the competition and coalesce more power and control into fewer hands. But ultimately, those who were decent people who had worked for their own, the middle class, if you will, that's what's being destroyed here. And under socialism, you would get an underclass only, and then everyone else, which is those who would rule over that system.
Yeah, the first great invention of the Enlightenment was the guillotine.
That's right.
And although a few of the Bourbons were sacrificed because they were popular figures of hate, they were the Jimmy Savile types of their day, the majority of the French aristocrats actually fled to places like Lombardy and Piedmont and all these other little kind of, you know, duchies around, you know, Central Europe, and they were fine, and a lot of them went to England, and you have this, like, the myth of the Scarlet Pimpernel that was, like, cut up, that he was rescuing the royalists. So he wasn't, they were actually already there. But the idea, the majority of people killed in the French Revolution, like you said, were small business people, but also the great unspoken genocide of modern Europe was the murder of hundreds of thousands of Catholics in the south of France. And they didn't even, like, put them on trial. They knew that they would have a terrible time bringing them into a godless society. And the inherent hypocrisy shows again, because after a while, the French Revolution, after a very short while, realized it could not actually take the spiritual nature away from the people, because it wanted a kind of a cold scientific society, that they actually installed a goddess of reason inside Notre Dame Cathedral.
Well, exactly,
That shows you that that's ultimately, their system doesn't work on any level.
Well, I mean, we've, Robert Bavall mentioned about this too in the Talisman and then later the Master Game, that showed this very interesting thing of when they tried to demolish, one of the famous buildings. I'll look this up in a minute here. But the fact is that they tried to build a pyramid out of this. It was strictly on the premise of an older worship of the great architect of the universe, an Egyptian Freemasonic idea. And this was the tenets of what the faith was at the time, of what it was built on. It's just, again, it's just, we can just take steps back further in history and look at, what it has been. But the fact is that this thing that was supposed to be about reason and kind of, scientific principles and all these things, it was more superstitious than anything you'd seen in the history of the world.
Absolutely. And it was based, and the whole thing that it's intellectual, it's like intellectual. This is the intellectual path. I mean, Pol Pot was a Western educated intellectual, and yet he had these wacky ideas of agricultural collectives that basically ended up him murdering half the people in his country in order to produce like a bizarre kind of farming system. And again, this shows up over and over again, that you cannot manage a society based purely upon science or reason or, numbers. You must have an element of compassion. And what you do not get in a scientific system like socialism is compassion.
Let's take a little break here, Thomas, before we carry on in the second segment here. We have, of course, much more to talk about. We'll continue to deconstruct this. But give us your websites, Thomas, and tell us a little bit about some of the titles that you have out there. In the second, I want to talk more about the Anvil of Consciousness, your latest book as well. But give us some of the details where people can go to find out more about your work.
Yeah, the book is The Anvil of the Psyche. Same thing, I guess. But
sorry about that.
No, it's okay. We have a right to be confused.
My mind is elsewhere right now, but yeah, go ahead.
My website, my main one, is thomassheridanarts.com. Everything can be reached from there. I've got a very active blog, which has basically exploded in readership in the last few days because of that article I wrote on Russell Brand and enormous amounts of abusive comments. But that's okay. And they can get everything from there. My current book is The Anvil of the Psyche, and that you can get links from the other books that I have in the past on psychopathology if you want them, if you haven't read them already. I'm also still a very active artist, and I have a beautiful 2014 calendar out if somebody wants to get that, because I think like creativity is always the answer to these things. And, you know, instead of looking at, you know, socialist updates all year long, you can look at nice pictures that I painted. And there's also, you know, I've got a radio show on Sundays on Type 1 Radio Network. The link is there too, called The Velocity of Now, which is just basically, again, I talk about the stuff you talk about here, but I also bring in things like little talks about art, and I bring in comedy bits and stuff, just to try and make life a little bit easier to deal with, because it's a difficult time to be alive right now, I think, in many ways, if you're not like wired into the system. And I think that's actually an element of what's going on here too, Henrik. I think people who have woken up have been damaged by telling their friends, you know, this kind of alternative conspiracy stuff. It's backfired on them. It's hurt them emotionally. It's hurt their relationships. Russell Brand being on the BBC kind of validates that for them, so they can say to their friends and family, see, I wasn't a nutcase after all. See, this is another game they're playing with people as well. You have to be careful of that too. They're always playing on your emotions. They're always getting that dopamine, oxytocin, and all these other, you know, neurotransmitters. But anyway, it's thomassheridanarts.com, and that's basically, you get everything from there.
The Anvil of Psyche, thomassheridanarts.com. We're going to have that linked up. Stay with us, everybody. We'll be right back with more.